Yeah, I love that groovy jazz, man. Where's Jim?
Fiend phone.
Hello, Jim
Fiend
Jesus.
Phone.
Is that you, Jim
Hi,
Jesus?
How's it going?
Hi. Yeah. Oh, hi.
We got drone.
See you there. We did. It was, I blame the government. That's everybody's problem, is the government. So this is the Freedom
Fiend
Fiends.
Phone.
What's up,
Fiend
Jim?
Phone.
Fiend phone.
Oh, no.
Angela, that's unacceptable. It's not working. Disconnect. And she's gone. That was funny. That was like the Mattel Freedom Fiends, like pull the string and the Freedom Fiends. That was like 8-bit audio fiends for a second.
So am I still going to do the intro anyway?
Yeah, do the intro.
Okay.
Pretend there's
so
music
this,
playing.
All right. This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from 18 Sycamore Street, selling you Hello Dolly records at the Cryptid Corporation. We alter your Constantinople by marching your moles to the sea with moisture on her lips. This Santa dog... This Santa dogs your Jesus fetus to no presents in the future to keep a tray of chicken legs and deviled eggs before they take an empty one away. Is everybody ready for the picnic in the jungle, Michael? Are you ready for the picnic in the jungle?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. So we should talk about something, two movies that we saw recently.
Yeah.
One I recommended, one you recommended.
A wonderful double feature. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first one you did, we'll talk about later, because I think that one's probably going to be a little bit more fun to the end of the show. But we should talk about The Residence first. So there was a film called The Theory of Obscurity, which is a documentary about the avant-garde art group called The Residence, which it's hard to even pin them down as a musical band, especially after watching this, because when you start to realize these guys are failed filmmakers. Since that's how they started out. They were a group of four guys, allegedly, who formed this group after they kind of didn't like the counterculture movement in San Francisco after moving from, was it Louisiana? Louisiana.
Yeah.
And they kind of didn't like the hippies, but they kind of didn't want to go back to Louisiana, so they kind of did their own thing. And
you know who else didn't like the hippies who kind of made similar music or had a similar place in the world but was a much better musician was Frank Zappa. He hated the hippies. He really did. Yep.
Yeah, and so they kind of did their own thing, and the first thing they ever did together was they went to this kind of like an open mic thing for folks.
Boarding house.
The boarding house, is that what it was called?
I can't believe there was footage of their first gig at the boarding house. I mean, you have to remember, like, in 1970, what was that, 4-2, something like that? Like,
I think it was in the 60s, because they got together like, early 60s, yeah.
You know, people didn't have a high def camera with a good microphone on it in their pocket, like to film. And they didn't even have like video, like you didn't even have analog video then. It was like, if you wanted to film something, you had to use film, and it was expensive and most people didn't use it. And if they did, I mean, I guess they probably recorded like, you know, 2 minutes of that gig and that's what was used in that documentary, but it was expensive. Like, you know, when you were shooting film, I shot film as a kid before there was video, you know, available to the public, film, Super 8 film, which didn't have sound, most of it. The sound stuff cost more, but it was like shooting film, you had to be thinking about the like dollars per minute it was costing you for the film you're developing. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's when they did their first gig together, and they did their classic "Go F Yourself" on the doorknob mom, and they were just kind of making kind of like weird noises and kind of going off on like musical tangents. And there was a guy in there named Ensenada who was responsible for the Theory of Obscurity, who was playing the saxophone, and it was kind of just like, and everybody in the crowd didn't know what to do with it. They didn't know if they liked it. No one was booing, no one was cheering, but they knew right then and there that they had something when everybody was just in shock, because they were only used to people trying to be the next Bob Dylan there. Like, that's what everybody was doing, right? And so they decided, okay, well, let's make a film. And they decided.
Isn't that kind of funny? Like whenever there's somebody who comes out of the counterculture and is or is the counterculture, is counter to the culture, like Bob Dylan, who, like, you know, was totally radical for his time. Everyone wants to imitate him and therefore becomes the norm. You know, like everyone wants to normalize. Everyone inadvertently normalizes the radicals by trying to everyone imitate the radical always, every time.
Yeah, it's like that image you see of a bunch of punk rockers standing around and pointing out to the one guy in the suit. Look at that conformist.
Fiend phone. Fiend phone.
Oh, Angela.
Angela. Angela, just try during the break. Come on during the break at 19 after, exactly. 19 minutes after, then we'll deal with this. Boy, this is just bad audio theater. This is the Freedom Fiends theory of obscurity. So explain the theory, the name of the, go ahead.
Okay, so the theory of obscurity is the idea that in Sonata, it like initial N Sonata came up with that says that an art, you can only create pure art if you don't take into consideration outside influence and criticism. And what you get is kind of like pure art, right? And you can kind of tell with the residents is they don't go by any kind of norms whatsoever. They don't use typical chord structures or scales, any kind of like musical theory. Like they just throw it out the door. The only thing they kind of keep intact is like rhythm, and even then it's debatable whether or not they do that. But
you know, it's kind of weird.
Tribal.
They kind of tricked me because I always thought they were really good musicians who were really playing weird music, but they're really not very technically good musicians, which I don't know why it fooled me. Like as a pretty good musician, it fooled me. Like there's a few things I've heard by them a lot. I'm not a fan. I've never owned their records. I might have made a mixtape that had their version of Constantinople on it or something, but they kind of seem like they've always been in my background, in my life. Like I always knew people that liked them. I'd go to parties at weird people's houses, even in Virginia in the early 80s, and people would be playing The Residents. And of course in San Francisco, you know, you'd go into a restaurant and they'd be playing The Residents, and you'd probably be sitting next to The Residents eating at the restaurant, but you wouldn't know because they've been totally done a really good job at being anonymous and hiding their identities. I really like the theory of obscurity, that phrase, the idea, and as the title of this film. And it's kind of it's kind of validated me because my life I've always done good art that's weird, that's not very popular. And, you know, of course you could say like anybody who sucks and makes stuff that isn't popular would also cling to that theory and say, oh, I'm great because I'm not popular. No, but I know I'm great and I know I'm not very popular. You know, even this radio show, like there are just the fact that we don't do the same thing over and over, we don't have the same hosts over and over. We don't, mainly we stay away from the current events. I mean, the most current event we're probably going to cover tonight is the fact that this documentary probably came out in the last 6 months about this band that's been around for about 40 years. Not really a current event, you know?
Yeah, like, the DVD came out 6 months ago, but it's been making kind of like theater stops and small showings for a while, but none in Vegas, so I have an opportunity to get it. And then I had just forgot about it because it's been touring for a year and they had not released any notifications for a Blu-ray for a while. And I just was like, okay, I'll just get it when it comes out, and I never heard anything about it. And then I just stumbled on it on Amazon, and I was like, oh man, bye. It's been out for 6 months. How did I not know about this? So,
yep. Yeah. And then somebody put it up on some site, but
yeah, that's horrible. That's terrible that someone would do such a thing. And you should definitely not go and look for it and watch it there. You should definitely pay for it because that's wrong. It's illegal, and therefore it's wrong to do, right? Or something. Anyways.
I think The Residents made this film. What do you think of that theory? I didn't look at like who the director is or anything, but what were you gonna say?
No, the guy that produces is a guy named Don Hardy, and he has some other works up there, and it's okay. He's way too young to be a resident too. He's old.
Another thing too. The way too young to be a resident thing. I remember hearing the theory that Les Claypool was the singer of The Residents, and I've seen. He's in this movie, he's interviewed, and he laughs about that, and he does talk about how they are an influence. And I remember seeing a really early gig with them of them playing a resident song, and like that solidifying to me, oh, that's kind of who he sounds like. But he's way too young to be, you know, he's probably 48 and the residents are all 60 something, aren't they?
Or yeah, older. On Frizzle Fry, it used to be a hidden track, but now it's on all the pressings now. It's like a mashup of Constantinople and what was the other one? Hello Skinny. So and that's on the Frizzle Fry album, and then on the Miscellaneous Debris, there's another one. I can't remember which one it was, but Les Claypool has said that one of their albums, Duck Stab, which I agree with, that Duck Stab is the one of the greatest, if not the greatest, ever thing ever recorded by a human and put to vinyl or put on recording. By
you sound obsessed, man. You agree with that, don't you?
I agree. I don't know if I agree with the best, but it's definitely one of the best. Yeah. Hmm. And if you hear it for the first time, especially Constantinople, you're going to be like, this is offending everything that I understand about music.
You're
not going to like it.
You know what's wrong with most libertarian media and why the theory of obscurity works?
Mm-hmm.
You know what most libertarian shows are talking about today? They're talking about who's going to be president. There's nothing less libertarian than that topic. It doesn't matter to libertarian. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't. And really, I want to do the show that would exist if all that crap was out of the way. And if all that crap was out of the way, we'd be talking about the residents, I think.
Yeah, residents for presidents. I'm all for this.
Is that a saying?
No.
That's funny. I know. Should be.
But I was looking for resident stuff earlier, and every time I typed the residents, it wanted to come up for presidents, and I was like, no. How dare
you? Yeah. Yeah. I hate when Google tries to decide things for you, like Bitcoin. Did you mean Bitcoin? No, I meant Bitcoin, the shortest lived, the theory of obscurity cryptocurrency that existed for 8 days and was great. And prove otherwise. How will you know? Worms.
Angela, come on now.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Beans.
Yeah. Oh, you made it back. I don't have to go so bad.
So we're talking about the theory of obscurity, the documentary from the residents that Jim and I watched, a double
about
feature.
The residents.
About the what did I say?
From the residents.
I still think that they...
Yeah.
Put it this way. I don't think anything went into that they didn't let go into it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I'm sure they had a lot of control over it, just to kind of make sure that nothing was leaked about their identities, for sure. I don't think we ever talked about that, really.
Yeah.
The fact that these guys are anonymous.
Yeah, and I heard a theory back in San Francisco. Well, it was actually from a friend of mine that worked in D.C. at Constitution Hall, where they played... And he said that that he had seen their sound check and they weren't in costume and he knew who they were and that one of them was a woman. And I don't know if I believe that theory anymore. I think there was a woman that toured with them and sang, and she's named and shown and interviewed in this. You know, I think that's
Molly.
What I was thinking of. Yeah,
Molly, forget her name. Yeah, I knew that she was never really an anonymous member of the band. She had always kind of been public about who she was, and they always introduced her on stage and stuff, usually.
That they are in this film without costumes. I think they are the people who run the Cryptic Corporation.
Yeah, that's a theory, too.
That's a theory, and I think that that's it, because it's... I don't know. They're not a big enough industry that it would take three people to manage their... I mean, I guess now, you know, at some point it was, but when they started, I don't think it would have been. I don't know, maybe, but I think it's what they hid behind. I also think there are probably hundreds of people who know what they look like, because they have toured, and I really don't think they probably... You know, when you tour, you know, the audience sees you on stage for an hour or two, but there are lots of other people who see you. I mean, there's people who, you know, tell you where to park your vehicle. There's the people that help you load in. There's the people that, you know, drive you to your hotel room. I mean, there are lots of... Are they wearing giant eyeballs? Giant, uncomfortable eyeballs the whole time they're doing that? I don't think so, man.
Yeah, they could be wearing makeup or you know, some kind of primitive mask, and then put on the bigger mask. And
there's actually also footage of them early on in there.
Yeah,
I mean that stuff at their first gig, that open mic at the boarding house in San Francisco. I mean, you can see their faces. I mean, they look like kind of like hippies. You can see what they looked like then. I think one of them is that guy, John Kennedy, who said that he got to be the president of the corporation because his name was John Kennedy. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, well, all he said was it was just my name, and then his name appeared underneath it. John Kennedy.
That was funny. I like that.
And, so, I mean, no one really exactly knows for sure who these guys are. They've never been interviewed as the residents that we know of. And the whole point of that is kind of ties into the whole theory of obscurity, is where they just don't want to be attached. They don't want their identities to be attached to this music, so that when they produce this weird, crazy stuff, they have full artistic license to do whatever they want. And like, you know, they were talking about in the movies, like when they had some piano guy come and help them record one of their albums, like they were like, you know, what kind of scales or whatever, say, they're like, make your own, do whatever you want. You know, don't pay attention to those rules. And that is kind of like bizarre. And that's why they sound so weird. And everything kind of has like this weird structure to it.
So tell me about, I kind of want to talk more. I want to talk as much about the residents as we are about this film in general. First of all, if people don't know why they're called the residents, it's kind of the same reason that the band The Replacements is called The Replacements. The residents sent a demo tape to Warner Brothers Record with the return address, but no name. It got returned to residents at the address, and that's where they picked their name. The band The Replacements was picked because they didn't have a name, and they were taken to the place of somebody who couldn't make it at a gig for their first gig. It was actually at an AA lunch meeting, and they were drunk. But you know, it's not like with Kiss, where like they're in disguise, but they still have strong personalities and are rock stars as each persona. You know, the residents are interchangeable and hidden. And, you know, I think Kiss did it partly as kitsch, but also partly so they could walk down the street and not be hassled. And, you know, the residents did it for a whole bunch of other weird reasons. I kind of like it, though.
I think Kiss would be recognized if they walked down the street, though, because they have people kind of know what they look like. I don't know if they did in the 70s.
In the 70s. In the 70s, it was a huge mystery, and they did a record called Kiss Unmasked, where they unmasked, and it sucked.
That's what happens when you go into the theory of obscurity, and then
most of them were really ugly, and a couple of them had really bad pockmarks, and everyone's like, put the makeup back on, man. I wasn't into Kiss. I didn't like them. I kind of like them now, but I kind of like a few songs by now, but I really can't listen to them because that bass player singer dude is such a neocon who wants to kill all drug dealers.
Tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Freedom Fiends, we're talking about the band, the group, I guess, the residents, the musical ensemble. It's been around since what? Under that name, since what, 72, Jim? 74, something like that.
Probably in the 60s, maybe. When did Santa Dog come out?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I want to give an example of what they're like. So they do a lot of original music, but they also do kind of deconstructions of other songs. So I'm going to play this original song from 1953 that they later covered. This is called Istanbul, Not Constantinople by the Four Lads. You ever heard that?
No, I've never. I thought this was an original song by the Residents. This is interesting.
No, actually, you know who else had a hit with it was what's his name? He's in the Blues Brothers. This is racist, kind of, isn't it? Cultural appropriation. Yeah.
Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Been a long time gone, old Constantinople, still a Turkish delight on a moonlit night.
This is the same song.
You don't even hear it as the same song?
I do. No, I don't think it is.
It's absolutely the same song.
She'll be waiting in Istanbul. Even old New York was once new.
No, I don't think so. I disagree, sir.
It's the same song, man.
Listen. I disagree with that.
Here I come, Constantinople. I'm coming, Constantinople.
This is the Residents.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the same song. I thought it was.
What's interesting is that this is the song that Les Claypool first heard and was horrified by.
You know who I think they were a big influence on that I didn't hear any mention of in that is Oingo Boingo. Do you know that band?
I think that they probably do. Yeah. Oingo Boingo probably does take a little bit of influence from.
Yeah.
A lot of bands did.
And this is Hello Skinny by the Residents, which is kind of one of their hits, if there's such a thing.
Yeah.
Was influenced by by the Residents.
Yeah, he's definitely got that kind of that. Almost said his name. He's definitely got the Red Eyes kind of twang going on.
Who?
There, but
you almost said whose name?
Red Eyes' real name.
Who's Red Eye?
Nothing. I don't know nothing. I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Red Eye is so originally the band kind of went by what color eyeball they had, and so there was Red Eye who did the singing, and then there's Blue Eye and Gray Eye and Brown Eye.
Wait, are you saying you know who the Residents are?
Yeah, I know who the residents are. Just through deduction. Yeah.
Are you one of the residents?
I could be.
Anarchist bitch bot, which is could be, you know, it's one of those like it's kind of like a Twitter feed for the residents. Yeah, like we don't know who it really is, but maybe she was supposed to be on the show tonight. Says that the ghost of GG Allen wrecked her fiend phone. Make of this what you will, because it is GG Allen's 60th birthday. Well, it would be if he hadn't taken the hero's way out. Died of a possibly intentional but probably accidental heroin overdose.
Yeah, he kind of lived by the theory of obscurity, but it wasn't more like, I'm going to protect my identity from criticism. He just says, like, if you want to criticize me, go ahead. I'll just fight you.
Yeah.
And throw poop at you.
And he was really, too, like, you know that kind of punk rock thing of, like, you know, if it's popular, it's crap. Well, no pun intended, crap. But he kind of pulled that off in a way that didn't seem like, you know how when like college students, I discovered this band and they're really cool and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I was listening to
the residents before they were cool, man.
I don't just like stuff because it's obscure. I mean, a lot of stuff I like is obscure, but a lot of stuff I love is very mainstream. I mean, I love the show Breaking Bad. I love the show. You know, I love Led Zeppelin. I love, I don't know. I love some stuff. Pink Floyd. Yeah, some stuff that's very, very popular. I like Nirvana, although I didn't discover Nirvana
Dream Theater
until after they were gone. Dream Theater's kind of still cult following big, yeah. I think.
Well, they only have one good album from what I can tell.
I mean, when you look at stuff like Dream
After That, it's been terrible.
When you look at stuff like Dream Theater, you know, they have like 8 million hits on YouTube, but it's really like 8 people listening to the same song a million times, I think.
Yeah, which, by the way, would take forever, considering most of their songs are 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
It was kind of a joke for a while.
I did this cartoon animation thing with somebody, and it was called Fever Dream Theater, and it was basically like, we took this weird dream I had about being on a public bus and someone trying to, like, give me an enema bag, and then taking me to this like tower where there were these ladies waiting on him. It was really strange. And we made a little like 3-minute video of it. And I called it Fever Dream Theater. And it was nothing to do with the band. I'd barely even heard of the band. And like all of the hits of it, I don't even know if I still have it on YouTube, but if I do, like it's got like a million thumbs down and very few thumbs up. And it's because all the Dream Theater fans found it in searches and were disappointed that it wasn't a new Dream Theater song called Fever. Yeah. Fans can be weird.
Yeah.
Residents fans, especially. They're really weird. So why do you think you know who they are? Just say it. It's not like you're going to harm them. Everyone has theories. The Wikipedia is full of them.
So they recently did a tour, and one of them was gone.
A tour,
and I'm just Jewing by deduction that was probably one of the other people that left.
Did you say you're Jewing by deduction?
Doing by deduction.
Okay,
that's good radio, by the way.
It is. Yeah, like Nick last night. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. No. The other three I had seen live. Now, they were wearing costumes and masks and stuff when I saw them, but I can kind of gauge by their body type, and they kind of fit with who I kind of was already kind of figuring out who it was. And of course, the singer, his voice is unmistakable. He has, like, you know, and I hear him talk every once in a while. I'm like, that's definitely got to be him, especially when he was actually talking during the show. And you can kind of tell that they were trying to keep it a little bit obscure, a little bit, because they were doing some sort of effect on his voice when they did the live show version of the Residents. They were obscuring his voice, so he didn't sound.
They really
like
weren't, though, in this movie, though. In that footage that was near the end of the film, there was probably a recent performance of them where there were only three of them, and the guy was wearing like a Santa costume and a mask of an old man that covered like the top third of his face. You could kind of see what he looked like under it, though.
Yeah, I saw that particular performance, the Wonder of Weird 40th Anniversary tour.
Yeah.
And it was part of a 3-tour thing that they did with Randy, Chuck, and Bob, where they were supposedly coming out of hiding, and that's who they were, was, you know, Randy, Chuck, and Bob, which is clearly just not them. So I saw the second one, which is their 40th anniversary tour, which was amazing. And I went to the one at the El Rey in LA. And every time I see that footage from that movie. I'm just like, okay, can I see me in the crowd? Because I was up kind of towards the front of the crowd.
Is that Vegas footage though? No,
L.A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went out to L.A. to see him because they didn't do any stops.
Was it sold out?
No. I think it did sell out when we were there, but
the El Rey
wasn't sold out.
That theater is really weird because when they're not having a show there, it looks abandoned. Like if you walk by there on the sidewalk and look at that, it always looks like it's been closed down for years, but they still have shows there all the time.
And it's really beautiful inside. It's really clean and nice. So, but yeah,
probably that's Angela's neighborhood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's probably listening. She sent me an email and said, I'm listening to the Freedom Fiends on LRN like a common civilian. Or like a damn civilian. That's it. Yeah.
But this movie was really good. But the only problem with it was only 90 minutes, and there were so many other stories that I know about from the residents that they didn't have enough time to address, like how Penn and Teller, how he got involved with the residents and what they did to him. I could talk about that for a second. Basically, they hired him when they did their very first show. They wanted to have someone to narrate the show to people who didn't understand what the residents were all about, and they wanted someone who didn't understand what the residents were about. So they found this carnival barker magician guy who nobody really knew, called Penn Jillette, who we all know now.
I know. Young. I never knew he was young. Like I saw footage of him in there, and I'm like, wow, because I don't know, he's one of those people like Hubert Selby that you only know him as his current age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Dead. No, and I'm kidding.
So they had him come on, but part of the contract was he had to be locked in a hotel room and listen to residence music for like 48 hours. And initially he said it was torture, but by the end of it he fell in love. So he kind of like barely understood what was going on with the show and was trying to narrate what was going on in the show for everybody so didn't understand. So it was kind of a learning experience for the audience and
nice.
Their narrator. So yeah.
This unknown carnival barker.
Yeah.
Penn Jillette.
Worms.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Do you want to make money working at home? Join the high-stakes world of selling BIPCOT No Gov merchandise. The BIPCOT No Government license is licensed under the BIPCOT No Government license, which means that you can go to BIPCOT.org, download the high-res logos, and make your own BIPCOT No Government merchandise to sell. The best part is you keep all the profits. And if you send a picture and mail a sample to the good people at BIPCOT.org, they might even help you promote it for free.
As long as you're not a government or a government agent and you don't advocate for any governments in any way.
Help promote liberty, make money, have fun, meet interesting people, be the envy of all your friends. Be the coolest kid at Fiendfest Somalia. Laugh at the state while it collapses, all while making and selling your own BIPCOT.org merchandise. What will you design? Get creative. Lots of folks are doing it, but there's always room for more. There are BIPCOT t-shirts, flags, drink cozies, turntable mats, Bip Strong bracelets, Bip Cut stickers, playing cards, and even Glock pistol backplates. You might even get mentioned on the Freedom Fiends. You're still kicking yourself for missing out on the start of Bitcoin. Don't miss out on BIPCOT. Get in on the ground floor now.
Not a guarantee.
Start your new life today at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org.
This is weird, by the way.
What, Fever Dream Theater?
Episode 0001.
Is it radio friendly?
Probably not. Anyways, so we should kind of talk about... about this movie, there was like some stories that we were talking about. They didn't mention the Penn Jillette story. But they also didn't talk about the theory of obscurity.
Thank you.
The theory of obscurity.
About who? By what?
About the group, the musical group, film group, multimedia artist called The Residents.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, radio. Yeah, there was a lot of things that they didn't talk about in this film, which was a great film, but it was just only 90 minutes, so there was a lot of things they couldn't talk about. But they did only kind of, as a side mention, talk about a guitarist named Snake Finger, who died in the 80s from a heart attack.
Who was there since the beginning.
And they just kind of like, oh yeah, we also were playing with this guy called Snake Finger, and I think Les Claypool mentioned him once, and it was like, come on, man, that guy was there from the beginning, helping them record guitar tracks.
Whoever plays guitar with them now sounds like Snake Finger.
Yeah, it's definitely not him.
He's trying to sound like him. Yeah, I know it's not him, but
yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's like little stories like that that they left out that they could have probably expanded on. And I'm sure they had the footage to do, but, you know, I don't know anything about filmmaking, so you could probably tell me that I'm wrong.
Well, you got a lot of making a documentary is cutting, really. I mean, it's, you know, scripted dramas generally have a cut ratio, you know, an editing ratio of like 3 to 1, maybe even less if it's really, really pro everybody. Documentaries generally have like, you know, between a 10 to 1 and a 50 to 1 ratio of what you use to what you cut. It's almost the same ratio as reality TV, where you just film someone for 24 hours and use the worst hour of it, you know.
Yeah.
Or film 24 hours for a week and use the worst hour of it. I mean, where the worst meaning where they act the worst. Yeah.
Yeah. But the theory of obscurity, which the residents kind of base their whole entire philosophy on, and which kind of gives them their weird kind of music and art, kind of ties in a lot with the Freedom Fiends. I don't know if you've noticed this at all. Like, we don't take calls. We don't, you know, we don't care what people talk. You block people who criticize constantly. You. Yeah. So we're
no, just kinda... no. I don't block people who criticize me. I block people who are rude to me. There are people I've blocked who agree with me 100%, but they're just mean. And there are people who disagree with me very strongly who I have not blocked. Like, I have a couple friends that are, one's an actual friend in real life and one's a longtime internet friend, who are avowed socialists. And you know how poorly I feel about socialism, but they're still my friends because they've never been rude to me. Yeah. No, it's when, in basically what gets you blocked from me is ad hominem behavior, not disagreeing.
I don't know. I'm a jerk, though, which is interesting because, like, I too also, for some reason, like, my YouTube channel attracts a lot of lefties.
YouTube attracts a lot of horrible people.
Yeah, and I'll make videos attacking the left, and I'll make videos attacking socialism and communism, and they still stick around. They're like, oh, man, well, I still like your other videos. It's like, okay, whatever. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess I kind of abide by it too, because I really just I'll see it, I'll respond to it, but it's just one way for the most part. When I think about doing stuff, I don't care. Like, oh, people will think I'm dumb in this or something. Like, I have a video up right now which I would have taken down if I really cared, where I was talking about jackalope, and I was just still kind of, you know, sun-baked from being out in the sun for an entire week and hanging out with a bunch of libertarians and, you know, cooking things in a fire and, you know, roughing it for a week. And I didn't care. I don't care. I'm probably going to re-record it just to kind of go over it and be a little bit more concise, but I just don't care. My media is one way.
Yeah, me too. My media is one way. By that, what you mean by that, or what I mean when I say that, at least, is it's from me to the audience, and I don't really care to hear back. You know, people could say this is really messed up, but it's like, I kind of don't mind hearing praise, but I don't want to hear criticism. But that's because the criticism is wrong. It's always wrong. It's incorrect. You know, I mean, I do want to hear if I said something incorrect, like if I said, you know, Uruguay when I meant Paraguay, you know, correct me on that for sure. But if someone's disagreeing with kind of the whole thing of it, I don't need to hear it, because I know those people are out there. I know they are idiots. I don't want to hear from them.
Yeah.
I basically want praise and money. That's the way to interact with me.
Hashtag please donate.
Yeah. Praise and donate. Yeah. Tithe and sing praises.
Not asking for tithing.
That's gonna go in out of context fiends probably tomorrow. Gigi Allen, 60th birthday party when we get back. We're gonna dig him up and party with him.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Crystal Pepsi. You got an intro?
Nope.
All right. We're the Freedom Fiends, and we operate under the theory of obscurity. So, yeah. You know, I always liked the bands that were, I really like what Brian Eno said about the Velvet Underground. He said that the Velvet Underground only sold 20,000 copies of their first record, but everyone who bought a copy went out and started a band. I think that's kind of true of them and probably of Joy Division and probably of the Sex Pistols, too. All right, so I found this Fever Dream Theater thing. It was put up on YouTube in 2007 on one of my old YouTube accounts that I probably don't even have the password to anymore. I don't even think I have the email to log into it. It's got 6,840 views, and it's got 16 thumbs up and 19 thumbs down. And most of the thumbs down are Dream Theater fans who thought they were tricked into coming here. And, you know, I was thinking about during the break, too. I was thinking about Les Claypool and the Residents. Basically, the Les Claypool, Primus, wear their two biggest influences on their sleeve to the point where if you crossed the Residents and Rush, you'd have Primus.
No, I think it would be more King Crimson. King Crimson, there was a period where they were doing stuff like Telehunginjeet and
Discipline. Telehunginjeet?
Yeah, Telehunginjeet.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's an album called Discipline.
It sounds like Telehunginjeet. That's my favorite. I love that record. That record's great.
Yeah. Back in the day, Les Claypool used to say that Primus is a King Crimson ripoff band.
Yeah.
But there was definitely also a lot of Floyd in Residence.
They toured with Rush, too. There's a lot of Rush, too. Mm-hmm. They toured opening for Rush, and it was kind of, I mean, Rush were the headliners because they were Rush, but it was kind of like a co-headlining. Yeah, because I think that it was possible that Primus were more popular at that moment when they did that tour.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm gonna play this Fever Dream Theater thing I made. If you I'll put this in the show notes, but if you go on YouTube and search Fever Dream Theater, it should be the first thing that comes up. And I'm gonna have to censor this live, but my wife and I wrote this with my friend Scott Ligon, and then he did the animation for it, and DJ and I did the voices, and a couple other people did voices too. And then Scott took, there was like, he had, DJ took pictures of me from all different angles so he could kind of animate me. And then he just took pictures of like five of his friends and used them as the faces and bodies in this. So you'll have to go see it, but even the soundtrack of it's pretty funny. So here it goes. So I'm on a bus.
I dreamt I was on a city bus.
Yeah, okay.
This one's my agent's cousin's sister's dentist's
some weirdo
wife.
Cool. I just got married myself. 1 month today.
Really? Congrats, little dude. Spend this on your woman. Get her something nice.
Thanks.
Take her easy, C-note.
You like women? I heard you say you like women.
I like my wife.
I'm going to my mansion. I'm interviewing young ladies to be my personal assistant. You need to come with me now. Now! So, you read the ad? You know that I'm looking for celibate women.
Why?
I don't want any young men getting in the way of you doing your appointed duties.
I'm single, but I won't sleep with you.
Well, you will be required to sleep with me, but only sleep. I do not sully my seed on human mortals.
Well, that sounds possible, and I do need a job.
And you'll be required to give yourself an enema every morning. I don't want you wasting work time by pooping.
I'm out of here, you sick.
Ooh. She slaps him. I had to
Here, this is part of the job interview. Let's see how you perform under real-world conditions.
Is this supposed to be a thing about Gandhi?
No. Does he sound like Gandhi? You think?
Mm.
Or he looks like Gandhi?
Not really. No.
Or was he like that?
Was he he was like that.
No.
My plans for world domination are approaching fruition.
No, it's literally frame by frame, a dream I have. Yeah, so there you go, man. So go watch that.
No, but Gandhi had a thing where he would have these young ladies give him enemas and lay naked with him and sleep with him. And
but wouldn't sully his seed on human mortals.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Wow, I didn't know that.
No, yeah.
Neat.
Yeah. Gandhi was definitely a flawed individual.
Sure. Yeah, I like that term. I used that last night on all the characters that... The guy who plays Gus Fring, I said he always plays deeply flawed individuals. And here's a nice segue. Speaking of a deeply flawed individual, you know what today is, Jim? It's a special day.
Is it when Gene Wilder figured out something about Hillary Clinton?
No, it's when Gigi Allen would have been 60 years old. For those who don't know, Gigi Allen was a punk rocker back in the 80s who... and 90s, who died of a heroin overdose, but he promised to kill himself on stage and kind of pushed out by just dying. But he, I don't know, take the like most shocking rock and roll performance you can think of and multiply it by about 10, and you wouldn't come close to Gigi Allen. I mean, I don't know. When I was a kid, like what were parents afraid of? Kiss, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was biting. Supposed to be
Knights in Satan's Army. Ugh.
Yeah.
Or Knights in Satan's Service. Or Ozzy Osbourne. Like, no. Like those are polite old gentlemen compared to Gigi Allen. Put it this way. Gigi Allen prepared for shows by taking X-Lax. Let's just leave it at that. Keep it radio friendly. So yeah, it's his birthday.
I never got into Gigi Allen until you started talking about him, and then
I think a lot of people didn't until
I remember hearing about him in the 90s on all those talk shows because my sisters used to watch those I used to hear about all that stuff and
he was on like Shock Rocker on he was on Jerry Springer, he was on Geraldo, he was on a few other shows. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I think we've doubled his album sales probably talking about him. And we do have, if you go to there on the Android store, I made an app that is it's called Find Gigi Allen's Grave, and it only does one thing, and it does it well. It will give you door to grave directions of how to get to Gigi Allen's grave.
Yeah, but it's important to point out that things that do things well are things that usually do one thing only. When you start getting it to do multi-stuff, then it starts breaking down, and then there's bugs and
issues. There's a term for that in software even. It's called bloat. I mean, I'm still using, I was using my, and this is when I was writing for a living, like in the 2000s. 2001, 2003, 4, I was still using Microsoft Word 1997 because that's when I feel it reached its peak and everything after that was just bloat. And at some point I had to update because I was doing a lot of back and forth with editors that were using a later version of Word. So I had to finally settle on like Word 2002, and that's everything is backwards compatible with, like, I'm still using Word 2002 or 2004.
You haven't tried using LibreOffice or anything like that? That's what I've been using because it's open
I've
source.
I've used that hippie stuff.
Oh,
well,
come on.
Here's the thing. That crashed the first time I tried it, OpenOffice. And why should I use something when I already have Microsoft Word? Like, I have the install disk for it. I own it. You know, I think I bought it like at a yard sale too, like used, but it still installs. So why should I use something that there's no reason to change? Like a lot of people, people always tell me that I should use Linux, and I actually had to do some Linux stuff over the past couple of weeks with using Bitcoin, but I don't have any reason to use Linux. And most people that use Linux don't know how to configure it anyway and don't have it secure. So there.
That's true. Like, I use it Linux, and I, you know, sometimes I'm like, well, I don't know how to do this, and I have to Google everything. But it's fun. It's fun. It's kind of a learning thing for me.
It's fun. I've installed on a computer in my basement.
Yeah, but for the most part, I don't even use LibreOffice. I've been using just Google Documents. Google Documents does pretty much everything it does. I don't think it does.
I don't like PowerPoint. Using Google Documents because. When you don't have internet connectivity, you don't have access to your documents.
Yeah, but who needs computers without internet?
No, I mean, like, when, you know, probably an hour or two a month, my internet is down, which is why I have two internet connections. But no, I don't like the idea of storing my stuff on someone else's server. There's also privacy issues with that.
I wouldn't, you know, post my kinks on there or anything like that. But, you know, if I'm just going to post like, oh, Freedom Fiends intros, yeah, it's going on there.
Last night when we were doing the show, Lisa said something about homeschooling. And we went to the break and she's like, oh, my God, I just clicked a page on Google and there's an ad for homeschooling. Like, and she hadn't been searching anything like that at all. Our theory is one of two things. Either it's as creepy as this, that, like, you know, she had her Android phone sitting on her desk next to her and they are always listening, and that it heard that and told her other machine that she's logged into on the same accounts to serve up an ad for what she's talking about. Or it could be something as simple as, like, right before the show, I tagged her and Nick. And so it goes, oh, she's doing something with this person, Nick, and Google knows that Nick is homeschooled or self-schooled because he's been interviewed on podcasts about homeschooling.
Yeah,
so it could be something like that.
And all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's pretty creepy. And I don't want Google having all my documents. Not that they're top secret. It's just, you know, I don't want the government reading my stuff. And I'm slightly less concerned about Google reading my stuff, but I still don't want them reading my stuff. I don't want them serving me ads based on some short story I'm writing, you know?
Yeah, they're horrible with ads with me. For some reason, they still try to, like, send me these ads saying, hey, do you want to rat your friends out for using pirated software? We'll give you money.
Oh, I get those. Like, yeah, that's the scariest thing in the world, man.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that. Come on, man. That's terrible. I think that they're trying to get like, hey, yeah, I know you know this company that you're competing with, and you know they're using. Come on, just rat them out. That's what it really is, and it's horrible. Yeah. But do you want to talk about the Free Hate Project?
Well, after I was just going to say we're about to go to the break because I actually turned up my music and I'm looking at the clock.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm acting like a real radio professional here. So, yeah, I want to talk for 45 minutes about the Free Racist Project, which is a nickname for a movie called Welcome to Leith, L-E-I-T-H.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
So tell me about the Free Hate Project, not State Project, Hate Project.
The Free Hate Project.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about this documentary called Free. Wow. Anarchist Bitchbot just posted, there is so much filth on the show. On this show tonight? Is there filth on this show? Oh, I think she was responding to the the little cartoon we played. So, Welcome to Leith is a documentary about a guy who went to this town not that far from me called Leith, North Dakota, and tried to take it over and make it a white paradise, a white man's paradise. Now,
that don't win over well.
Yeah, it went over horribly. I remember when this was happening because this was local news here, because it isn't that far away. You know, North Dakota, I mean, South Dakota, the top right corner of Wyoming touches the top, the bottom left corner of South Dakota. Like, you know, the Black Hills extend from this state into South Dakota, and then North Dakota's right above that. The Dakotas are technically not considered part of the Mountain West. They're considered part of the Midwest. I had to look this up because they're such a kind of no man's land. I had to be like, wait, what is that? And, you know, the only thing most people know about them usually is Mount Rushmore, which is in, what, South Dakota, right? We're on the air right now in South Dakota, so we better get it right.
Hi.
North Dakota, which is even colder than Wyoming, is a low population state. It's a, you know, there are a couple of metropolitan areas, but it's largely huge expanses of, I wouldn't say nothing, but I would say of not a lot of people. It's very, very much like Wyoming. I was trying to explain, I wish Steve Miller were on here, because he turned us on in this movie, didn't he? Yeah, he told us to watch this and was going to discuss it with us, and he's not on. But if he's listening, he's welcome to fiend phone in. A lot of the opening footage of this, where you just see endless nothing. I mean, it's kind of stark. Prairie is the fact that there are still swaths of land in America where you can drive 25 miles without seeing a house, let alone a person, let alone a house, or vice versa, whichever smallest to biggest. So that exists in the Dakotas and in Wyoming and in Idaho. I mean, this state is just so empty, Wyoming, and a lot of North Dakota is like that too. So there's this town called Leith, which has a population of what? It was like 26 or something. And this guy, Craig, what's his name?
Cobb.
Craig Cobb.
I think
he'd been
Craig.
Like, who'd, what's that?
I think his name's Craig Cobb. I know his last name.
Yeah, Craig Cobb. Yeah, who'd been like, he'd been kicked out of like some other country for trying to do the same thing.
Estonia.
And, yeah, kicked out of Estonia. And he'd been kicked out of some other state for trying to do the same thing. And so he tried to move to, you know, this small town there. He started buying up properties, which there were a lot of them, because it was a town that, you know, probably used to be a little more happening and had more jobs and doesn't anymore. And so there's a lot of people have land there that they're willing to sell. So he bought up like 8 or 12 parcels and then started deeding them to like the head of, you know, the National Socialist Movement and things. And and people started visiting him there and then moving there. And, you know, all of a sudden he had his own little free hate project of like 8 neo-Nazi, not neo-Nazi. I don't think that's accurate, but what would you call them?
They're neo-Nazis. The National Socialist Movement are definitely neo-Nazis, but he also had like weird white supremacist people on there. It was anybody who...
It was a big tent of white supremacy. Yeah.
But they were working kind of closely with the National Socialist Movement.
Yeah, and this town had one black guy living in it who was married to a white woman, and this guy started... Craig Cobb moved there and started making his life hell, but he started making everyone's life hell because they did not welcome him because, you know... And this is how it is in small towns in this part of the country. Like, if you show up and you keep to yourself, they'll come out and welcome you and shake your hand and then leave you alone. And that's pretty much how it is. Like, they'll leave you alone. But if you start making waves and the national press starts coming and, you know, you say on that national news, like, I don't really like what that guy's doing. And then all of a sudden that guy is doxing you on Stormfront and giving out, like, you know, your home address and your phone number and where you work. And I mean, this guy was heinous. He was, yeah. He, you know, I really would have no problem I'm in a free association, and people probably think that's horrible that you think people should be able to be white supremacists. I think they should be, as long as it doesn't get in my face, you know. But this guy was getting in everyone's face about it. Yeah. And getting up, the thing that guy said about that guy's dead dog.
We're going out,
I
by the way.
To shoot him. I know we're going out.
Okay.
I can hear it. I'm riding it out.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
Yeah. How's your cat, Jim?
Doing well.
Good. So are my cats. I want people to know that during the break, Jim Jesus talks to himself and laughs to himself out loud. I thought
only on the internet.
I thought he thought I was still on during the break. I always step away during the breaks. I got things to do. I can't talk and plan. So I walked away and I heard Jim talking and laughing. And I went on and I was like, you know, I'm gone, right? He's like, I know. I'm like, who are you talking to? I thought maybe he's talking to the board op. He's like, to myself. What were you laughing about? Explain the Jill joke.
Oh, so
if
that
it's so
was
so funny.
That
was, why don't you share it with the whole class if it's so funny?
All right. So everybody's, I don't know if you've heard about this, but everybody I know has been hearing about this Harambe meme, which is the gorilla that was shot at the Cincinnati Zoo. All right. So it was about 3 months ago this thing happened. And, you know, a lot of animal rights activists got their, you know, tizzy in the
What do they want?
Blender.
They wanted to eat the kid? They were saving a kid, right?
Yeah, but they don't care because, you know, animals are better than humans, according to these people. But anyways, so, like, the internet kind of responded by kind of making fun of them by over-hyping this Harambe thing. And then there was also, I can't say this on radio, but it was male genitals out for Harambe kind of movement to try to get people to faux spread awareness.
That'll work.
It was all a big prank. And ever since then, Harambe has just been kind of like a big joke. And Jill Stein, not aware of the internet.
She is the Green Party presidential candidate, right?
Yes. And, you know, she's totally blissfully unaware of the. She thinks that Wi-Fi causes cancer and needs to be banned and stuff. She posted about, like, oh, it's been 3 months since Harambe kills. And she was like, people need to support this and give voices to the voiceless, not knowing that it was just a big joke. And the internet exploded, and one of the funniest tweets that I've seen in a while in response to this was, I'm glad I got to see this before the Wi-Fi killed me. So, now she's mad that the internet's blowing up on this one comment she made, but we're ignoring all the other comments that I made about the poor. And
I don't think you can run for president these days if you don't understand the internet, but I don't think anybody running for president does. I really don't. I don't think they understand. Maybe. I don't know. He posts some pretty ridiculous things. Like, I think he thinks that only white people can read his Twitter. I really do.
Yeah. Speaking of only white people, she's
talking about this movie. Welcome to Leith, about the white supremacist Craig Cobb, who tried to take over the town of Leith, North Dakota, that's so small you could fit everyone in it in my bedroom without them touching each other, and my bedroom's not that big.
Yeah, the last census they took was 16 people in 2010.
There were 24 when this movie was made. I think some left because of this guy.
Yeah. Well, this was in 2010, so it was before then. So I'm sure, like, someone had some kids. And if you look at it on the map of where Leith is, it's basically two little streets. That's it.
It kind of seems like the kind of place that most people would leave, though, when they become of majority age.
Yeah.
Actually, it kind of seems like a place that I would see runaway children posters from in my local post office.
Yeah.
You know, it seems, I don't know. It seems like, I mean, if you turn 18 there and you're still there and you're not working at the one business in town, which I think is a metal shop or something.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? Why wouldn't you leave? There's actually this whole, in my town and in this part of the country, there's this whole kind of movement of old people to try to figure out how to prevent brain drain, you know, because like Casper, Wyoming, it's a huge, I wouldn't even say problem, but it's a huge fact that most people, when they turn 18 here, if they're not, you know, really close with their family and working on the farm here or something, and they want to do that for their life, most of them leave, you know, and go to the bustling metropolis of Cheyenne or Denver or something, at least, mm-hmm. you know, if not Hollywood and New York. But there's not a lot here for young people, and whatever there is here for young people, they try to regulate out of existence. You know, like, this is gonna be the last state to legalize pot. You know, if you opened a video parlor here, like the local, you know, church lady groups would try to shut it down. There's just nothing for young people here. So they all leave. And I'm sure in Leith, it's even more so. But yeah, this one guy like came in and kind of ruined this one little town. And I would be willing to bet that the residents of Leith before this guy showed up.
The residents or
the residents. The people who lived there, not the Panther residents. You know, they probably wouldn't have liked, you know, a bunch of angry, citified black people moving into their town. But they, you know, they what I'm saying is it's possible that they didn't even really like non-white people that much, but they just really didn't want the national attention of this guy, like bringing the whole weight of, I mean, there were scenes in here where, like, you know, he invited everyone in America who's racist to come for a picnic, you know, a weekend cookout, and, you know, 200 people showed up, and then like 200 counter protesters showed up, including Native Americans, and then like the National Guard and the state police showed up in riot gear, all on this like middle of nowhere property, you know, like not
there wasn't even they didn't even have water hookups.
Yeah, it wasn't even near the two streets you mentioned. It was like a way out in the country.
Yeah.
And that's how they finally got him, was they like had a city council meeting. You know, he was trying to take over the city council too. Like, that was his plan, was the Free State Project thing of move to a small underpopulated place, bring a bunch of people there and vote your way into power. That's why we're calling it the Free State. Is, you know, we're calling it the Free Racist Project is because that is the plan of the Free State Project. And here's something interesting.
Maybe not through voting so much. A lot of them are so for voting.
Yeah.
Some of them
anarchists, but he was definitely about, you know, taking over the political reins of this little town. But they actually used that against him. They finally just passed a resolution that you had to have water hookups, and he didn't have any and didn't have any way to get him out there. And so they started fining him, and eventually, like, he had a warrant, and they arrested him for not, you know, for not showing up, basically. And actually, then they arrested him and throw him in prison for menacing someone with a gun, which I think was actually a bunk charge, because, you know, as someone who sees nothing wrong with walking around with an openly carried weapon, I don't think he was menacing that person. I think he was holding a gun and not pointing it at a person while simultaneously yelling at somebody.
Yeah.
I don't really think that's menacing.
Yeah, he wasn't brandishing the weapon or anything. Like, he wasn't pointing it at people or threatening people.
Nope.
Then he was just walking around. He was using it to kind of intimidate people that he was yelling at, and he was going over to people.
But they were coming to him.
And they were also coming to him.
I don't know if that was private property or public property. I mean, since we're not in lib, you know, I mean, in lib pair, there wouldn't be
or
public
hate pair.
Property, but yeah, hate pair. Hate paradise. Yeah, you know, there's a thing too. Do you know what the American redoubt is? I don't know, or redo. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you say it, but redoubt.
No.
It's actually a concept. John Wesley Rawls, I think, was the guy's name who wrote a book like 15, 20 years ago that was about basically doing what Craig Cobb was trying to do, but do it to like five states. Like, you know, it was take over Wyoming, the Dakotas, Montana, Idaho, and Utah, and making them a white paradise. And that was a plan. And this is a little known fact. That was an influence on the Free State Project. And the Free State Project, the guy who set it up was not racist, but he had read that book. And that's where the idea for the Free State Project came from. Of political migration and taking over an area. It was from John Wesley Rawls,
and they're actually doing a good idea. They're actually doing a great job over there in New Hampshire, but these guys
of what, couldn't keeping it white.
keeping it libertarian.
They are. How many? There's like one black person in the Free State Project.
Yeah,
that girl that does the sex podcast that uses recordings of me and my wife having sex for their bumper music on their ad. Oh, I like that podcast. I like those people.
Oh yeah.
That's people will know who I'm talking about because I've mentioned that before on the show.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the Free Hate Project. They couldn't even get eight people to come and stay.
I know.
Long enough.
I know.
Well, like they bought all this property. They had like probably not even like an acre or something. Probably had like about an acre, and they had like two buildings on the acres, and they had plans to build up. And all the only thing that there was, they started with two buildings, and by the time it was done, they had one.
Yeah.
And it was dilapidated.
The guy was horrible too, man. The worst thing I saw him do was there was one of the people from the town had moved to this town. He and his wife had moved there because their teenage daughter was murdered. Lived in this a big terrible. City like, I don't know, Portland or something, somewhere in Pacific Northwest.
And
you know, so they moved to a small town because they didn't want to live in a big city anymore. And Craig Cobb at one of the city council meetings, got up in that guy's face, the father's face, and said, "Oh, your daughter was murdered, right? You probably had something to do with that." You know, I really believe that if the father had murdered Craig Cobb with his bare hands right there, if there hadn't been a camera on, you know, of some like outside reporter at that point, I think that the townspeople probably would have helped him clean it up and just adjourn the meeting. And I would have celebrated them doing that, really.
As someone whose daughter died,
like that was so over the line.
Pale. You know? It's way beyond the pale. But they were also doing like stuff from the very beginning, like showing up at the city council meeting, you know, harassing them, screaming white power and doing the hill. They're like, dude, we're trying to work out a resolution right now. It has nothing to do with you. Like, go away. and they were just sitting there screaming and making a ruckus. And they ended up taking over the city council for the big meeting and, you know, like doing all sorts of stuff and threat. I think they even threatened the black guy that was living there. Like, oh, we're going to dispose of him or something. I mean, just off the wall stuff. And then it turned out the guy who was running this thing was basically a Clayton Bigsby. Do you remember Clayton Bigsby from the Chappelle Show? There was a segment where it was
the black white supremacist who was blind. Yeah, Craig Cobb got DNA tested, and he's twice as black as I am. He's 1/32nd black. There were 14. Two tests. I'm reading on about him on. There was the one on that show that said he was like, you know, a quarter or something, a 16 or 25. Yeah, but he dismissed. And then he had a second one that was more accurate that put him at like 3%, whatever it was. It was twice mine, and it worked out to like 1/32nd. So he's part black, man. We'll be back with the thrilling conclusion of Welcome to Leith Analysis.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny. DJ, how do you like the fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT. .org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. This says stickers, and there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
State speech is hate speech.
Yeah. It is. And if you'd like to purchase a state speech is hate speech sticker or button, you can freedomfiends.com. Click on the link at the top that says buttons or the one that says stickers. And anybody who orders buttons or stickers in the next 96 hours will also get two free Bitcoin stickers.
Do you take Bitcoin?
I do take Bitcoin, except there's no way to transfer it to me. I can actually transfer it to myself, but it's only because the way that cryptocurrencies work to prevent censorship and to decentralize, which is kind of cool, is that they log like the last 100 IP addresses that they've connected through. So it can, like, even if the seed nodes die, which we have killed them now, you can still connect. Like, basically, if there's somebody else out there who used it as much as I used it, we could probably send it to each other, but it wouldn't verify. It would say incoming forever and be stuck at the same at the same block. But yeah, I was able to transfer it from one wallet to the other, but only because it knows the IP address that I was using, you know, for a week, and is still can send from one to another in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
I had about 550 before. Yeah, I've had about 550 before it all came crumbling down. So
I had 6,500, and I posted a screenshot of that as a joke, kind of when we killed it. And somebody who was not aware of any of the goings on was like, "Man, congrats! I'm envious." And I'm like, "What do you mean? You're envious that I have 6,500 unspendable coins?" And they're like, "I don't know why you consider Bitcoin unspendable. That's $550 now." And I'm like, if I had 6,500 Bitcoin, I would not be bragging about it on the internet. That's enough to kidnap somebody over. That's like $3.5 million. I would not be bragging. No one would know. I'd still be doing the show, but just no one would know if I had that much Bitcoin. You know, you think about all the people that are famous for having a lot of Bitcoin, unless they're like the Winklevoss brothers and they, you know, like are totally in favor of, you know, regulation and are helping write the regulation. Everyone I know that has millions of dollars in Bitcoin, it's bit them in the butt in some way. You know, they've either been like charged a whole bunch of money leaving America, or they've been, you know, thrown in prison or something. Like, you can't have a lot of Bitcoin and brag about it. Doesn't work.
Yeah, someone will rubber hose hack it.
Yeah, they'll just beat you until you give them some.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, $3.5 million is definitely enough for someone to want to kill you for it or torture you for it. But it's not really enough to hire, like, full-time bodyguards.
Yeah.
You know, for very long. I mean, you could for, like, you know, a weekend or something, but, you know, and you could say, well, you know, but I'll carry a gun, but people that carry guns can get kidnapped. It's very possible, you know, unless two people are carrying guns and watching each other's back the whole time. Like, really, it's a full-time job guarding someone, which is why people hire guards. They also hire guards because, you know, people are pussies and can't defend themselves and won't carry their own guns, so they pay someone to do it. Pusses, or they live somewhere where you can't have a gun. But no, like, really, a full-time bodyguard can do a better job guarding you than you can carrying a gun and guarding yourself, you know? Yeah.
So yeah, don't have that kind of money. Don't brag about having that kind of money.
Yeah.
Even in crypto. Yeah.
Don't. But if I had a lot of money too, I would not drive a fancy car. I'd drive you know, a nice SUV or something, but that's it.
A 72 Woody station wagon. <That's> and going driving to Wally World.
Armored.
With armor.
So you got any closing statements about the Welcome to Leith documentary? I do have something to say. I'm going to watch a documentary tonight. If anyone wants to join me and watch the same documentary, and then we can talk about it. I'm going to watch Elvis and Nixon, which is a new documentary that just came out, which I'm kind of like, didn't that come out years ago? And I'm thinking about it. I'm like, no, I'm thinking of the photograph. The photograph's so iconic of Nixon presenting a kind of plump Elvis Presley who looks really stoned with an honorary DEA badge. And like, Elvis is out of his mind on narcotics in that picture. You know,
yeah.
Yeah,
but it's only the Beatles that did that hippie drug stuff.
Yeah, Elvis. He was complaining to
Elvis
to
never Nixon did no drugs
about the Beatles and their druggy lifestyle. Yeah. He also tried to bring a Elvis tried to bring a revolver into the White House to give Nixon a gold-plated one. And, like, Secret Service were like, no, you know, we'll give it to you. You can't walk in there with a gun. He's like, why not? I'm Elvis Presley. Worms, you know?
Yeah, worms.
Yeah, worms.
Don't walk into White Houses with guns.
Yeah. Walk into white people's houses in Leith.